Hey there, sports history fan. Arnie Chapman here from the Sports History Network. Now, before you jump into this episode, I wanted to share with you an exciting giveaway we have going on with Home Field Apparel. We have a digital $50 gift card to homefieldapparel.com for one lucky fan of the Sports History Network. All you got to do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways to sign up. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways.
The football helmet symbolizes resilience and power and is radically transformed throughout history. It's gone from the leather headsets to the hard plastic and beyond, and some improvements have been made to the inside and the outside. Today, we talk to Timothy P. Brown about one of the first external paddings of the football helmet, the predecessor of today's Guardian, and it's coming up in just a moment with Tim.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And we are ready for a dig today. It's Tuesday. It's footballarchaeology.com day with Timothy P. Brown, the founder of that site. Tim, welcome back to the Pigpen.
Hey, Darren. Good to see you. And looking forward to chatting.
Yeah, looking forward to chatting to you too with your camera crew in the background filming your cheer team to root you on.
Yeah, I'm going to move to the side so people can see that. Yeah, it's just an old, I think it's actually from the teens, but not positive. I can look at the source, but I think it's University of Pennsylvania. So it would have been Franklin Field before they added the second deck.
Yeah, that loudspeaker that he was holding reminds me of my dunce cap I used to wear when I was in school.
Yeah, I never had to wear that, but no. You and I are different in that way.
I'm a big dunce, that's for sure. I've been called worse. So, Tim, you have a really interesting piece tonight, speaking of headgear that's odd, on some football attire that maybe up till a few years ago would be like foreign to us, but this is maybe some early generations of what we see today on NFL players.
Yeah. Well, yeah, so, you know, I don't remember if you said Absorblow or not, but we're talking about Absorblow, which is a brand.
I wanted you to say it first.
Okay. So Absorblow. So, you know, it's intended to absorb a blow, right? And, you know, if you think about, you know, a number of times we've talked about in the past, teams, or mostly, you know, manufacturers, but teams and individuals have tried to create equipment, or they've tried to use some new technology to, you know, to improve the game in some way. And sometimes they just don't have everything together to make it work. It could be that they just don't have quite the right materials. They don't have the right manufacturing process, or there's design issues. So, you know, what this is about is, back in the 1950s, MacGregor, which then made a lot of football equipment, sponsored research with the Cornell Aeronautical Laboratory. And the research was to develop synthetic materials that could cushion impact, right? And so aeronautical laboratory, so it probably made sense possibly for, you know, some early space kind of, you know, efforts, you know, outer space efforts, but more directly at the time, probably, you know, jet fighter pilots and, you know, things along those lines. But, you know, so pilots in general. And so they ended up creating a synthetic material that, you know, something akin to it probably was was in most football helmets, you know, late 50s to the, you know, well into the 70s. Okay. And so it was, you know, so that what they were trying to do was, you know, find a way to create a material that would absorb blows and cushion their impact. And so one of the first applications was they used it on the outside of helmets. And so if you think about nowadays, especially the past 2-3 years, you've seen a lot of teams wearing those Guardian covers on top of their caps, on top of their helmets, because they reduce, you know, they're supposed to reduce either the severity or the potential to the incidence of concussions. And, you know, those caps look goofy to us, but still, they're, you know, if they work, they work. And the teams typically just wear them in practice. They don't wear them in games. So there have been times in the past where college and NFL players would wear some form of protective cover atop their plastic helmet. So back in the 50s, what McGregor did, and they had the patent was pending in 1955. So it was, you know, that kind of period where it came out. And so they, what people most know AbsorBlow by was they created this, you know, strip that was on the top of the helmet. So where the stripes might normally be on a helmet, the strip, you know, started at, you know, above like the nose bumper and then went kind of diagonally towards the back of the helmet and covered the back. So, and it was a strip that was, you know, I don't know, not quite an inch, maybe it was an inch, that rose above the helmet. And
so you're saying about an inch thick?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Yeah. So it was about an inch thick. And I think, you know, that it was white normally, but, you know, teams would paint them whatever color they, you know, whatever was appropriate for their helmets. And so a lot of teams adopted this thing. I mean, it wasn't like, I don't think it was even like 25%, but teams like, you know, Cornell, they were kind of the guinea pigs for it. Dartmouth used it. So did Ohio State. So did Duke. And there's probably others, but I just, you know, those are the teams that I had found when I wrote this tidbit. I, you know, had found it just looking at, you know, photographs. You know, I could identify that they had done this. And actually that, because this AbsorBlow device, as I said, it kind of started right kind of the center of the forehead, you know, just above the nose bumper, and then it kind of went diagonally back across the helmet. If you're familiar with Dartmouth's helmet, they've got two thin stripes that follow that same pattern.
Their helmets are similar to Michigan's helmets, correct?
No. Princeton has the winged helmet look, and so does Delaware.
Okay, that's Delaware's own thing. Okay. Yeah.
But Dartmouth has, you know, they've retained this look since the time that they adopted AbsorBlow helmets, or, you know, thereabouts. But it's, so I think it probably, I think their design probably comes from the AbsorBlow device.
Hmm.
And again, it, you know, you're going to have to look up a picture of, you know, if you look up Dartmouth 1965, or if you go to, there's a site out there called Helmet History, which just has images of all, every team you can imagine.
I was sitting here thinking about it. I know Blaze that runs that, and maybe I can get some images we'll throw up here as we're talking here when we do the on YouTube.
It's a great site, so, you know, give him my compliments. I love that site.
Yeah, he's awesome.
So, you know, so it kind of set off, if you think about it, you've seen other teams that had that design that subsequently dropped it. So there was a period where they kind of, you know, that this AbsorBlow thing impacted the design of helmets, or at least, you know, the striping, et cetera, on helmets. So, but then they stopped using it, you know, mid 60s. And, you know, I've read some things so that, you know, best as I can tell, the reason they dropped it is what they found is while it did absorb the impact of the hit, the problem was that in some ways, while it was softer and it absorbed the impact more than, say, a plastic helmet, what ended up happening is that the person who was wearing the Absorblow, their head kind of got momentarily stuck to whatever they were hitting. So if two helmets came crashing together, they kind of got stuck because of the softness or the flexibility of the Absorblow. And that actually created more torque, or I'm not a physicist, so I may be using the wrong term, but it actually proved more harmful than the cushioning protection that it provided. And which is one of the reasons why they still don't use any kind of a, like those Guardian things. They don't use them in games. They use them in practice. Best as I understand, that's why those devices never really, they proved popular for a while, and then they disappeared because they proved to be more harmful than the good that they provided.
Yeah, I know you mentioned there was the one from the 80s, ProCaps, which were developed by, you mentioned in your post, but they were developed by a guy here from my area. He was the inventor of the ProCap, and, we know, like, the Buffalo Bills, a few of their players were using them. But theirs were interesting because they were painted the color of the Bills helmets. They had the red and the white and blue, sort of like the Bills helmets are now. I think they're pretty similar back in late 80s and 90s when they used them. But the Guardian, I was always curious. I have never seen anything but the black Guardians with the whatever there is on the clamshell design or whatever it's on all over them. They never have them in any other color, and I was wondering why they wouldn't do that for those.
Okay. I mean, I swear I've seen them in a bunch of different colors. But,
oh, have you? Okay.
Yeah, because they're kind of like, they got all those little ridgy kind of things.
Yeah, it's almost like scales of a alligator or dragon or something.
Yeah. So, I'm assuming the research shows that they're effective for that purpose. But again, nobody wears them in games. So, the other thing I just wanted to point out was that I just last week I received bought a new sporting goods catalog, and it's the 1955 McGregor catalog. So, that was right in the midst of, they're just developing this thing, and it's pointing out that they have patent pending on it. And so I'm going to do a new tidbit on it. But back then they were putting, teams were still transitioning, because some teams still wanted to wear leather because the coaches believed leather was better. Plastic helmets were too hard, da da da. And so so they were putting Absorblow on the exterior of helmets, on the exterior of leather helmets, and maybe even, for sure they were putting the center stripe on the exterior of plastic helmets. But on the leather helmets, they used it on the interior, and then they also used it like on the kind of the earmuffs. So, back then there were helmets where the ears kind of protruded from the general roundness of the helmet shell. And they also had it especially on the Cro-Magnon, right at the eyebrows. So, and then they also, they used it for shoulder pads, hip pads, knee pads, thigh pads, et cetera. So it became kind of McGregor's primary padding for the second half of the 50s. So anyways, more to come on that one.
Okay. Well, probably this will be airing probably just shortly after you'll be posting a new post. So folks, if it's not out yet, keep an eye out for it. It should be coming out soon with more on the McGregor Absorblow on footballarchaeology.com. Tim, why don't you, go ahead and share with everybody where they can find, articles like this older one that we're talking about tonight, this new one that you have on Absorblow, and some of the other interesting items that you have.
Sure. Best way to find the articles is to go to footballarchaeology.com. In the upper right-hand corner, there's a search function, so you can find old articles. I will tell you that, I'm trying to move more and more of the archives to the paid version. So, you know, you can sign up for free. You're going to get about a third of the total content. You know, if you're a free subscriber, you get everything. If you're a paid subscriber. Alternatively, you can follow me on, you know, on Substack, on their app, on Threads, and on Twitter as well, although I think so far maybe two people have followed me on Threads. So.
You're just they're hanging by a thread.
Yeah, that's right. Very thin thread.
That's right. That's one more person than I have on Threads. So thanks, Mom, by the way. So, Tim, we really appreciate you coming on here and sharing this interesting story of, you know, something that's from the past, you know, this helmet protection to protect player, you know, safety. That's ultimately important. That's making sort of a resurrection a couple times in our lifetime. So that's pretty cool too. So we really appreciate it. And we would love to talk to you again about next week about something new.
Very good. Or something old.
Or something old.
Alrighty, we'll see you next week.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com. Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Do you wish you knew more about the 100 seasons of the NFL? You're in luck because you found the Football History Dude podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. From the founding of the league in an auto showroom, all the way to what it is today, America's favorite sport and a behemoth of an industry. My name is Ernie Chapman. Football is my passion, and I want you to come along with me each week to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board my DeLorean, and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.